Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Unsung Heroes. Unsung Heroes. Unsung Heroes. Unsung Heroes.
Hi, this is Ricky Wilde on Unsung Heroes. Once again, you've joined us. Thank you very much for that. This week, we have part two of two parts of our chat that we had with Nick Kershaw and Lavenue. So I'll just put you right back in the scene again. There is me, Lee Bennett, Nick Kershaw and Jess from Lavenue. Yeah, beautiful chat. We were just having such a lovely time. So let's just get straight into it. Ladies and gentlemen, part two of Unsung Heroes with Nick Kershaw and Jesse from Lavenue.
The theme of our podcast is about unsung heroes, and there are lots of songs that you've written with and for other people that people wouldn't necessarily know.
That about lots?
Are you?
A few.
A few.
Enough to be on unsung heroes.
Is your process, or was your process, different when you wrote for other people to when you wrote for yourself?
The successful ones, no, not really. But I didn't learn that. I kind of, because the first, pretty much when I made a decision to stop making records.
Can we go back to that as well in a minute? I want to know why you did
very
that.
Very interesting.
Sorry,
I just thought I'll just do this. I'll just carry on regardless. I'll just write. And then I wrote, and the first song that I wrote was the one and only.
For Chesney,
and it wasn't for him. It just got stuck on a shelf for a couple of years or whatever. But after that, and I also my publishing deal was up, so I was going around different publishing companies looking for another deal somewhere, and I went to Warner Chappell, and I started writing a bunch of songs for Warner Chappell, and I sent them in, and the first comment was, they're great, but they just sound a bit too much like Nick Kershaw.
Mm.
So, at that point, I didn't really realise there was something that I did that was particularly, you know...
Made it you. Made it sound like you.
No, that made it sound like me. So I started changing the way I wrote, and also, especially lyrically, because you kind of... And that's
to
what
make them less personal?
Well, exactly, and that ultimately is what became increasingly frustrating was the fact you can't really say anything, or you can't have an opinion, because you're not going to be singing it. You can't put words in other people's mouth unless it's about I love you, you love me, or you know, you left me for that other woman, and whatever. Unless it's about those things, it's really difficult to write those songs. So kind of, and it was at the end of the 90s when I started. When I had those lyrics in my head, and I was going, I'll just write them down, and I'll just record them just to get them out of my head, that I realised I was going to have to just make my own records again. Otherwise, I'd go mad.
Yeah. one of your projects that I totally had forgotten but loved, and we were listening to in the kitchen, was the stuff you did with Stuart Price.
Yeah.
As Les Rhythm.
Les Rhythm Digital.
I remember, like, coming up and listening to it and thinking, it's such a nice tune. And I didn't know it was you.
Right.
What was that like working with Stuart?
That was a weird thing. That was totally, because I'd been out of it for a while. I hadn't really done anything as far as recording went. And I just got a call. I don't know how he got my number. He just called me up and I said, "Hello, my name's Stuart. I'm Jacques Leconte."
Yeah.
Excuse me. And I've got this. And he just went on about how he loved the '80s and he loved my voice. And there was a point at which I thought, he's taking the piss. I was pretty sure he was taking the piss. But I said, okay, we'll come over. And he came over. And I read up on him. I thought, this guy's nuts. He just. Because at the time he was Jacques Leconte. He used to pretend he was French in interviews.
He
used to have an interpreter.
brilliant.
He signed to Wall of Sound. And the guy that owned Wall of Sound was a guy called Mark Jones. Mark Jones was in a band that I produced back in the early 80s. And so he was telling me all the inside story of Stuart Price.
Wow.
And then how he went on to do all the Madonna stuff. The boy done good.
But he sat there and he said, "Well, I've just got these chords that I really like," and he played me his chords, and I thought, "Oh, that's quite difficult. they're not really easy chords to actually just sing a tune over." So we'll leave it with me, and I'll try and get something going. So I just put a top line on it and sent it off, and he said, "Yeah, brilliant."
Sometimes still sounds just sick.
And then the video came out, and I'm like,
"I know,
yeah, scary teddy bears."
Yeah, it is freaky teddy bears. One of the things you have in common is that you've both produced boy bands, written for boy bands. Let Loose, Worlds Apart.
Yeah, we had a couple of top tens with Worlds Apart. Yeah. And then they ditched me for some reason.
Did they? Ungrateful.
Number three, and then number 10, I think we got, and then that was it. Fuck off.
Yeah, I didn't get out of those dizzy heights with Lily, so I got number 11, I think we got.
Yeah, you did all right with them. There were some good tunes.
Yeah.
So who's your A&R for that, Let Loose?
At one point, at the beginning, it was Nick Beggs.
No,
really?
He was A&R
at
Mercury or Polygram, I can't remember.
Polygram, I think it was, isn't it?
Yeah. And he was doing that because I was asked before, and I was bit by someone else, and I was busy and I couldn't do it. And then Nick phoned me up and said, "I hadn't spoken to him for years."
Yeah,
you know. And he said, "What are you up to?" So I'm an A&R man.
Really?
That's like poacher turned game.
Well, Simon Cowell was my A&R guy for.
All right. Part. Yeah, I had a little brush with Simon.
Did you?
<I'm fine>.
Do we all, darling?
with a sort of country singer from Hereford called Bo Walton. He was really good, and I wrote a bunch of songs with him. And he couldn't get that off the ground. That was in his Robson and Jerome days.
Yeah,
Let Loose was quite. It was like a classy boy band, weren't they? They were marketed as a boy band because of how they looked, but they sounded and played a bit.
Yeah. There's a guitarist, a drummer, and Richie played a bit of keyboards and stuff. Yeah.
Can I just go back to what you said? Touched upon what you said earlier on when you stopped. Being an artist, why did you do that? You were smashing it.
Well, I wasn't smashing it when I stopped. I was half pushed and I half jumped, really, because I was I recorded the fourth album in Los Angeles, and come back and wasn't totally happy with it, and I kind of redid a lot of it.
Can I ask you why that was? Because I'd read about that and I was really curious. What is on the album that kind of survived from the LA gate?
It was, I guess, a lot of it survived. I just kind of didn't see eye to eye with, because I've always been a bit of a control freak. And the previous album I produced myself.
Yeah.
And spent far too much money and spent far too much time doing it. Which is why the record company went.
So they wanted you to
have a producer. Right. And Peter had just done Wang Chung and had a big hit with them. Afterwards, they had a massive hit with King Wishful Thinking with Go West and stuff.
How did that phone call go down? Were you happy about
it? Well,
that?
It wasn't. I was in LA for about 3 months recording it, and he knew when I left that I was going to take it home and tweak it and mess with it. And he wasn't very happy. Because it was basically two control freaks in the same studio, which doesn't really work. I replaced a lot of Jeff Beccara.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I know.
Good grief.
Because he was obviously a fabulous player, and there was some fabulous playing on it, but he just wouldn't fix anything.
There were
some a couple of fills that can you do that fill again? Nope.
Wow.
So we got Vinnie Colaiuta instead.
Yeah.
He's pretty bloody good. He's pretty amazing. Dear,
yeah. As that you worked do. Out terribly.
Yeah,
for
that worked out terribly. So he replaced a lot of Vinnie's tracks. And then there was another couple when I came on. I just sequenced and I put a sequencer instead. So there was a lot of that, and they were all remixed as well, because there were mixes that were done in LA, and I just didn't like them. But most of it kind of survived, yeah. And there were another couple of tracks that we recorded over here that didn't exist at all.
And you did a Japanese version, or was it US-Japanese version of One World?
There is a version that's not on the album, yeah.
I just wondered how that came about. Did A&R come to you and say, look, this is a great track, we think for the Japanese market we should do another version? And what your response to that was, like...
No, I'm sticking
with this one, thank you.
No, I don't think. Japan wasn't mentioned at all. I recall redoing it,
right?
But only because I think we'd had two singles off it, and I was looking for a third single. And I admitted, it was the way it sounded at the time. It wasn't a single, so
right.
it was recorded. In order to release as a single, but as to my knowledge, was never released in any shape or form.
Yeah,
obviously I was wrong.
So you're saying that last album?
Oh right, sorry, I haven't answered the question.
You have digressed somewhat.
I have digressed. So recorded that album. I came back to the UK, and the MCA Records wasn't the same record company anymore. I mean, the new management, new A&R, completely new. They didn't know who I was, and they hadn't signed me, and they weren't that interested, to be honest. I toured with Elton in his European tour. I was support for that, and I was just tired. And we just had Rudy, my oldest, was coming up for 2 years old, and I just wanted to be around for him, and I just fed up with it. Was just felt at that point it became, there was a time in the early mid 80s, it was just easy, everything was easy. I'm not saying it wasn't hard work, it was hard work, but you got results, and you got
guaranteed results,
you got guaranteed, and you got, there was fruits to your labors,
and
you could appreciate that. And it was, I was just going through a period when you were still working just as hard, and it just felt like you're banging it, you're head against the wall, and I just thought, well, you know what, and I was never ever really that comfortable with the whole celebrity thing and being kind of public property. And I was just, I thought, how easy would it be just to take a step back and write and produce for other people?
How easy was that?
Not very easy. Apart from getting incredibly lucky with the Chesney thing. But
did you miss it at all?
No.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, whether, at that point where you decided, okay, I'm going to bow out of this, was it a temporary kind of decision? Did you think, I'll come back in 5 years with something different, or...?
No, I didn't think that at all. I never really planned that. I've never made that plans that far ahead anyway.
Wow.
I'm not enjoying this anymore, I'm going to stop.
Right.
I didn't think, I'll come back later. I just thought, let's try something else.
And what made you want to come back into it as a performer?
It was basically, I wanted to be centre of attention again. it was just increasingly frustrating to working for other people and trying to, you've got a vision for something that you're conceiving, and it just, everybody's got completely different ideas, and it's going off over there and you don't like that, or it's going off over there and you don't like that, so you never get to see something through to its conclusion, and as I said, I was having ideas that were obviously mine, and so I literally just started recording them just to get them out of my head, because they're just otherwise you're waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning you can't get back to sleep. So they literally just exorcise these demons and get it recorded. And then I just sort of hooked up. And I told my old manager, he said, well, send them to me. And he said, well, okay, so they're great. What are we going to do with them? So we just kind of had another bite of the cherry. Yeah.
Are you enjoying it more now, Nick, than you did before?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think we are as well. I think Kim is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, it's like... A, I know how lucky I am, and B, there's just so much less. There's not the pressure. I don't put the pressure on myself, and there's not the pressure. And none of us have got anything to prove. We've just kind of we've been there, we've done that, and we're just enjoying the process. I enjoy the process. I'm not expecting. I mean, the album I'm making, I'm not expecting to sell any. Or make any money out of it. That's not
just as well.
That's not. I know. that's not. What I have. That's not what the. That's not what I, you know. The music business has moved on from anybody making any money. So I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it because I love the process. The creating the songs, making the music, being in the studio, working musicians. I just love that. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, once it's mixed, job done. I don't care. I don't care about that after that. But the gigs.
Yeah.
You know, the gigs, I used to be terrified of the gigs. I hate messing up or making a twat of myself. It didn't stop me making a twat of myself. but now I just don't care. I mean, it's part of getting older as well, apart from anything else, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's just kind of, well, you know what? So what? What's the worst that can happen? It's pop music. It's, you get on stage. People have come to see you, probably, you know, even if it's a festival, some people have come to see you. And just have a laugh and just you know, it don't. And you've probably gone through the period of like resenting the old songs for a little while, especially when you're bringing new stuff out.
You resent his songs.
No, resenting my old songs. Everybody resents my songs. and you go through that period and you think, well, I've made this new album and it's brilliant. I'm really proud of it. Listen to this. And they just want to know, how did you get your hair so big? and things like that. They
something
just
you'll never ask.
so you resent them then, but then you move on from that and you think, well, how lucky you are to have those songs, you know, just to go on stage. And, you know, we got on stage at a Let's Rock or festival or whatever, and you're walking in front of 15,000 people and you're playing it and they're having it and they're singing it back at you.
You know the reaction as well. You know the moment that
song starts.
It's almost
guaranteed. Yeah. You know? Not that you want to...
Pressure off.
It's totally pressure off. And it's just fun now.
What, in your view, is your greatest achievement?
Oh.
But apart from my five children.
and granddaughter. Oh, God, I don't know. There's a part of me, I don't know about you, Rick, there's a part of me that thinks, I haven't done it yet. I've still yet to do it. Yeah, I'm still. Yeah. Why else do you get up in the morning? To think, I want to do something. You just want to do something amazing every day.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of... I mean, I can look back of all my stuff, and although I'm proud of it, there's always things I would have done different.
Yeah.
You know. So
Lee asked me that, and we asked Shelley that as well. And both Shelley and my answers were the same. I think my greatest achievement is we're still here doing it.
Yeah.
Wow. We're still out there doing the gigs, and we're still out
good
there.
Good answer.
Can
you ask it again? Yours is better than mine. I like that.
What's it like?
We're still here.
What's it like with people covering your songs? If you hear, you know, obviously lots of your songs have been covered by lots of people.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that now, looking back? And if they get covered now, are there ones you really like? Are there ones where you're like, what was that?
There's all of those. There's the, but you kind of.
So Tina Arena's version of Wouldn't
That was
be
that
good
was great. That was lovely. I love that. Yeah, that. Absolutely love that. And it's a great, and you know, Placebo's version of Wouldn't It Be Good. I love that. That's just, you know, from one.
How from cool
one,
is that?
From one
yeah,
to another.
So yeah,
it's
yeah.
very cool. But I've never been precious about, which is just, well, they're public domain, anybody can record them, you know. But sometimes if they change it, but you get sent remixes and stuff because they've messed with it quite a lot and you have to give your approval or otherwise. I've never said no. Well, rarely have I, you know, I can't think of a case where I said no, even if I hated it. Because you know what?
Oh, it's a compliment, mate.
It's a compliment.
It's a real compliment.
It's a compliment and it might pay for some school fees.
Tony said that Tony Swain is on the pod as well, and he wrote a track called Just an Illusion, and of course Mariah Carey sampled that for her album, which was like, and that which finished up being her most successful album as well. And same thing, he said he couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
What a break.
Wow.
But they're not yours anymore. When once they're released and they're out there, it's like, you know, well, we'll let them go.
Yeah, they have a life of their own.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
One of the songwriting questions I want to ask you, which is a bit gossipy, but I read about and I didn't know, is that you co-wrote Forever Love with Gary Barlow but weren't credited on it?
Well, I'd love to think that was true.
Is that not true?
No, never heard that one.
So that's all over the internet. There's lots of stuff about that. And the story went that Gary didn't want to be... he wanted to be thought of as the sole songwriter on it, so that's why they didn't credit you on it.
Wow. No, that's not... That's
a false gossip.
Unless it was... I did write with Gary, right? Unless he's stolen that song and wrote something else.
Interesting.
But I've got to say, the song that we did write wasn't worth stealing, actually. it'd be the first to admit that.
And you did Live Aid? Were you part of Live Aid?
I did, yeah.
What was that like? What, do you remember it?
I haven't been allowed to forget it, really.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, well, why wouldn't people want to know about it? Because it was a big deal. But yeah, I don't know how much of it I actually remember or how much of it I've made up over the years. But I did go, when I went to see... the Freddie Mercury movie.
Oh, yeah.
That moment when he walks out and they've recreated Amazing. Wembley Stadium with CGI and everything, I nearly shat myself again. I did. It was
in the IMAX. Yeah, that's too real. It was 3D.
I had a real moment. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And it was you know, it was incredible. It was really scary. But I was on quite early, I think, so I got it over with.
So you realised at the time how big that was?
Yeah, I think, how could you not? You know, it was like 2 billion audience worldwide or something crazy.
Isn't the story right that you forgot the second verse, lyrically?
And wouldn't it be good, yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I've got this guy on my shoulder. I wrote an album. I dedicated an album to me. It's called To Be Frank.
Oh, is that Frank?
That's Frank.
Frank.
He sits on my shoulder.
Frank.
He sits on my shoulder and fills me with self doubt. There should be another one somewhere.
Mine's called a lot worse names than
is
Frank.
Is he? Yeah, no. I think we've all got a Frank. And but basically, he turns up in the really worst time moments. Because I can't remember. I think Wouldn't It Be Good was the last song. So I thought, I was just starting to relax. And I thought, oh, it's brilliant. We've got away. We've done it. This is amazing. This is really good. And then I finished the first chorus and Frank turns up and goes, he goes, you don't know the words to the end of this verse, do you? And then so I'm singing the words that I do know, desperately hoping that the the words that I can't remember.
Yeah.
Which I don't need yet. I don't know
right,
why.
Right, yeah,
I'm not going to need him for another 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So why he bothers with it, me with it now? I've no
He's
idea.
He's really trying to mess with you. Yeah.
And I think it's going to come. It's still going to come. So I sing a line from the previous verse instead.
Wow.
And in order to disguise it, I changed the tune and the band are going, and I only plucked up the courage to see it when the DVD came out.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, they had to put that one on. I thought it was awful. And I watched it, and I was with my sort of look through my fingers and just to watch that moment to see if I could actually see the fear in my eyes when it was going on. And I couldn't.
Wow.
I actually kind of got away with it. Yeah.
And you've recorded a bit with Kim over the years.
Yeah.
You've done little bits of her. Back doing Let It Be for Ferrier.
Yes, indeed.
Sing with Kim.
Yeah, little
bit together there. It was the MCA Kids on that, obviously, at the time.
Yeah.
And then on Come Out and Play, there's a nice little duet there as well.
Absolutely. And of course, who can forget?
The train video, the Rocking Around the Christmas Tree part 47.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've had some lovely tours. The Australian tour, that springs to mind.
Yeah,
so the story you've told me about that tour, I think, was your fear of going up on stage with Nick when you played guitar for him and you found some of his stuff really terrifying to play. I can't do this.
I mean,
you did it though, man.
Well, I think I just about got away with it. But I don't know if you remember, but funny story on that one was when we were rehearsing and I had my guitar board and I'd spent like 2 weeks bloody rehearsing, getting all the sounds on there. Halfway over to Australia, realised I hadn't packed the fucking thing.
Oh my god. Oh lord.
I'd forgotten that.
I had to reprogram the whole thing.
Oh lord. Yeah.
At the same time, realising the keyboard
but
player
with
wasn't
your stuff, Nick, there's so many different guitar sounds. I mean, like for Kim's gig, there's another guitarist there, Neil, and he got a massive pedal board, and he's just got loads and loads of different sounds, and he does most of the lead stuff. But literally, mine is just clean and crunch.
Right,
that's it.
Right.
And so it's fairly straightforward for my gig.
Yeah.
But Nick's gig is a totally different vibe.
Yeah.
So my learning curve was like shot through the roof on that. And not only that,
I had to learn Kim's stuff as well.
That was no walk in the park either.
Especially Neil's parts.
Yeah. And the parts as well were really intricate.
God, I don't envy you on that. God, Lord.
But I have to say that was one of the most memorable tours. I loved every second of
it. Yeah, me too.
It was so much fun we had on that. And I really hope we'd do it again. In fact, we were hoping for 2020 to do our Christmas acoustic.
Christmas acoustic.
Wow.
Maybe.
Wow.
Watch this space. You never know.
Oh, yeah, we were sitting on our private jet talking about it.
We were. We were in our private jet. Yeah, the private jet.
But that's another story.
Yeah.
That isn't parked out next to you.
No.
Has that got a roof or two?
Kind of.
So just coming back to La Avenue and your project, we love the EP, the Cherry Crush EP, there's a full-length coming next year.
There is. Well, the interesting thing about this was that, you know, this was one project, similarly to you, done a lot of record labels, etc., etc., and there's always somewhat limitations A&R-wise and what have you. And that's what's great in today's age is, you know, it's all there for you to put out yourself. You can get it mastered, you can do everything else. And so I really felt like this one is just totally my baby. It's just, I just want, this is mine. This is mine. And so I'd written a lot of material, but it was like, well, no one knows me. How am I going to come out? You know, if I'm going to come out with a full album, I could, you know, sell 5 copies. And there's a lot, it's a fair amount of hard work, you know. So I kind of, it's all about, you know, that horrible word, brand, these days. Mm-hmm. And because I think we live in a time which is fantastic for new kids and everything, because the technology is there, they can put something together, and it can sound half decent. They can put it up on SoundCloud, they can upload it on iTunes, they can do everything. They can even hire a PR person and everything, do it all themselves. Mm-hmm. And but there are so many people doing it. Yeah. Aren't they? I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah. Saturated.
Yeah, it's saturated. And I think people's attention spans are kind of like... Like I was saying before, you bought an album back in the day. It's kind of like that was your thing for a good few months. Yeah. Now it's kind of like, listen to that. It's
throwaway, very throwaway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I think the people that I really admired had very strong brands. The Midnight, which we discussed. There's another friend of mine. He's called Duet. I put you onto him, didn't I? And he's a guy also, you know, he's just Lindrum all slowed down.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just brilliant what he does. Very, very simplistic, but just totally that 80s vibe. Mm. And it's like, oh, wow, haven't heard that for ages. Mm. And so I noticed it was brand, brand, brand. So I actually spent quite a lot of time, name, logo, da-da-da. You know, if you're going to... It's about longevity, some persistence. And so I thought, well... I'm not going to come out with a full album. I don't want to come out with just one track or even four tracks. I want to sort of come out with something you can get your teeth into that's going to sort of, you know, have a nice taste of what could be there in future. So some slower tracks, Lipstick and Sushi, some bigger things, beautiful. Business Talk, blah, blah, blah.
Beautiful.
And
How many more tracks will be on there?
God, I'll probably, you know... It's not a Prince archive, but... funnily enough, I've written a whole album, and then, you know, you get to a point where you listen to it so much, you're like, I'm not interested in that anymore.
Tell me about it.
I'll do some new ones. Yeah. And it's like, oh, no. So I've actually... There's probably three albums worth now. But it's good because you sort of think, well, that could come out by itself. But there is going to be at least good 12 tracks with some little interludes
some
and stuff.
Vocals maybe on some of them? Vocals, maybe?
I'm getting your...
question is not...
No, I think about it.
Going back to the vocal thing quickly, I wanted to do some instrumental things. And what's interesting on this album, with Lipstick and Sushi, there's a lot of little vocal cuts.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And there's another artist, a French guy called Croquet Club. Sadly, he's not putting out much stuff, but he was putting some really interesting tracks and doing a lot of this vocal cutting. Mm. I thought, that's really clever. You don't have to hire a vocalist. There's no lyrics to write. Right. You know, you can just kind of chop it up and it's really interesting and detune bits and speed. And I just kind of gave it a go and it came out really well. And I thought, so I've done that on a few other tracks and it's actually come out quite interestingly by just choosing one word and then kind of cutting that up. Yeah. And there's a new track I've got on the go called Closer. And I just happened to get this one line of this girl and she sings this lyric, blah, 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 something closer. I thought, I'll have that just on the end. And so then I got all these other little vocal clips of just that word and different places. So that's the only lyrical content. Okay. But after that,
collaborations. Yeah. It's the name of the game.
A few names have been floated around, you know.
You and Nina, definitely, man.
Oh, that would be great.
I think you guys would smash it.
Yeah,
really good.
Yeah. Don't know if my wife's going to approve of working with Nina, though.
You know. Well, Grace Lightman, even. Grace, she said she's up for collaborations as well, bless her. And she's
wow. She's got a really interesting voice, actually.
So interesting.
Yeah.
And her lyrics are so out there. Love it.
And we know
I
the
stopped
process.
Your question, Nick. Sorry.
I
don't know if the moment's gone. Yeah. No, it's just you were talking about getting fed up with.
Stuff
because I've been making this sound for 12 years. So 90% of it has ended up in the bin because you just get bored, right?
But
I guess the good thing about the internet and the way things are now is that you can just do one thing and then put it out there and then it's done and then you don't have to get fed up with it.
That's true.
I love this. Yeah, bang, yeah, I've done yeah, it. Yeah. Bang, out
yeah,
it goes.
Yeah,
so do you ever do that? Do you ever release single things?
I actually should and I kind of
and
think
then put
about
them
that.
Together as a collection afterwards.
Yeah, the problem I have is the quality. You go, the newer stuff is always just a bit better than that.
Yeah.
And even it is stupid.
But this never release an album, would you?
No, I know.
Because it can always be better. There's always new technology.
All the new stuff is always new the best ideas. Thing you've done.
Exactly.
I think this is probably the pit where all those other people involved in the process can be of benefit.
Yeah.
Because if there was an A&R guy and said, that's great, we're putting that out, and it wasn't up to me, which sometimes it's not, is it?
Right.
You know, they're just like, we're putting that out. I'll be like, oh, good, that would be much better. So it's probably, that's the thing, you can do everything, but you're multi-hatted. You know, you're being A&R, you're being marketing, you're being the finance, you know, no, it's not enough money for that plug-in, mate, you know, and all of that. Yeah. And it's, I think, I probably need to be a bit more disciplined.
And that's the other thing, is the income stream. How do you get that happening?
Yeah.
And you're doing
income
yourself.
Stream. Sorry, can we back that up? What did you say?
As if, in this day and age.
I mean, this is, I mean, especially this project, this is like done for the love, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, funnily enough, looking at the way, I mean, the Midnight and, you know, what's interesting about Bandcamp is you can see how many people have bought their album. Mm. And just out of, you know, you have to click this more button to see all the people. But for fun, I did that on one of the Midnight's albums just to see how many people have bought it. And it was an awfully large chunk of people just for that one web portal, let alone iTunes, let alone Spotify, let alone all the other downloads and physical. And I thought, bizarrely enough, in this weird
if
little 80s
clever, you can
niche,
make it, you can make it work.
That's it.
Well, with
that's
the vinyl thing as well, you know, at the end of the day, the artwork is selling a lot of these records.
Yeah.
So people do I buy it? And then they see, this artwork's beautiful. I need it this size.
Yes.
Actually, I will buy it. Yeah. And the Midnight, definitely.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
The coloured vinyl, the marbled vinyl, all of that stuff.
And then you've got the merch, of course, for T-shirts and stuff.
Your stuff's going to look awesome.
I bought their... which album was it? Nocturnal on blue vinyl, heavyweight blue vinyl.
It's really
I didn't even have a player at that time.
You don't need.
I couldn't even play
it's stuff you don't need, and you really have to justify
to have it.
But you do because it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
and you think I've got to have this.
I was in Tankerton, Whitstable, where I was born, and there's a record shop there called Gatefield Sounds, and I used to go in there when I was God knows what age. It's still there today. They have not changed the carpet.
Wow.
Bit manky. the wooden sideboards, it still has the same aroma that it did when I went in there as a teenager.
Wow.
And I went in there and there was this Stranger Things what was it? Halloween special vinyl. Have you seen Stranger Things?
I haven't actually seen it. I mean, I'm aware that it's a big thing.
It exists. It's set in the 80s. It's quite fast.
The
music is outrageous. It is outrageous. And it's two... I can't remember their names.
Kyle Dixon.
Knew I could rely on you, Lee. But yeah, I mean, their music is so emotive and spooky and dark. It's kind of like Japan Ghosts on steroids.
Right,
you know,
that's amazing.
And,
very Giorgio Moroder, isn't it?
Yeah. And in that shop, they had this Halloween special edition on pumpkin orange vinyl, £25.
Yeah.
I didn't have a player then, but I was like, I've got to have it, you know, in the bag.
Quick plug for the very beautiful red vinyl of Here Come the Aliens live. Kim and Ricky Wilde. It's a beautiful item, it has to be said. Sounds great and lovely red vinyl.
Oh, thank you.
Had
Lee,
to have that.
For that plug. I will pay you later.
Thank you so much.
Your commission.
I was
check your PayPal account.
Just before we wrap up, I was just thinking when you were talking about artists in terms of working, you were talking about working on stuff for 12 years on one record. The artist that I always think of like that is Kate Bush, who seems the ultimate perfectionist in terms of who just goes away for years, is left to her own devices. And I wonder if it's the same. I wonder what goes through her mind in terms of why it takes so long to create.
I don't know. I mean, I think
work.
If it's anything like me, a big part of it is doing fuck all. For a while, and just not having the energy, or just I went through like a good sort of 9 month period when I was just nothing was happening. I wasn't getting any ideas. I wasn't, and every now and again I actually had to go in a studio and just kind of force something, or just kind of sit down with an acoustic and just right. I'm going to write a song a day for the next 2 weeks, and you just write a song. It doesn't matter if it's any good. You just write a song and just get that writing muscle working again.
Yeah.
And then you end up, and then you leave it for a couple of weeks, and you come back to it, and then you go, well, actually, that's a good song. That one song, or whatever. So you can. I mean, and that was the process really. And then, like we were discussing earlier, you go through a process of spending far too much time recording it, and you're fed up to the back teeth of it. But then you think, why did I like this in the first place? Why did I think this is a good idea?
Yeah.
Then you have to leave it alone again for another few months and then come back to it and think, oh, yeah, it is all right, it is good, or this really is shit.
Have you both had people in your life through your artistry where
that's the person you would go to really give you the honest opinion in terms of if you just get really confused. You, so me, I like
of course.
To, but do you have that? Do you have
I'm
someone?
Terrible. I don't.
Do you not share?
I don't even want to play it to okay. anybody. In fact, it's as much as anybody could do when it's finished. Get me to play it to anybody. It's
really?
I've always had the fear of being judged, which is, you know, not a good thing to have when you're doing what we do.
Tell Frank to shut up.
So, and you're going to get judged, and you're going to get people that don't like it. And I still hate that.
Yeah.
I still hate being judged like that. But, you know, you have to do it.
Mm. Wow.
Nick, just finally, do you have any advice for any songwriters? Any budding songwriters? Anyone who wants to be a songwriter? Anyone who wants to...
I think the first thing you've got to do is listen and just drink up and just listen to things that you love and just, you know, and try and take them to pieces and just saying, well,
analyze
why?
Them.
Yeah, mm. just go, well, why? What's going on there? Mm. And or just learn the songs and just sing the mm-hmm. songs that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all goes in. It's like a... You need fuel for anything, and you source material, mm-hmm. and it all goes in, and eventually that stuff will start coming out if you've got your own creative energy.
I totally agree with that.
It'll start because none of us are empty vessels. You can't work in a vacuum. We're all working with stuff that we've been influenced by, and
also try and keep it as fresh as possible. Listening to the same music all the time, I don't think is a good thing for a writer. I think it's really important to be listening to new acts like yourself, Jess.
Well, this is what really impresses me about you, Ricky, is that, you know, you're just, you know, you're constantly soaking up everything, you know, and this and that, and so excited
about it. It's a passion
now,
Jess. I live and breathe music, and it's always have done. And it, for me,
it's inspiring.
I'm fascinated by it. But also being around people like Nick and Lee and yourself, like, and Nina and all these amazing energies that come into your life and you start working with them, it's a wonderful experience. And you feed off that, you know, when it's in you.
Yeah.
I'd just like to wrap it up now, I think, because I know you've been looking at your watch.
No, it's just not on board. I've got a school run.
You've got a school run. So rock and roll, Nick, always. But I'd just like to say a massive thank you, Nick, for coming all the way up to see us, and so with you, Jess. It's been
a
wonderful chat. For me, I think this is the best one yet, isn't it?
You can't say that.
I know, but I'll keep saying that.
It's interesting because you asked earlier, you know, what are the highlights of your career? And I find this very interesting that I started this 80s, you know, sort of inspired project, which is not what I was doing before, you know. And at one point, I really was thinking, I'm starting this another project at this age, and somehow, you know, it's bringing me, you know, here I am with one of my musical heroes. So
two
oh, Lord, yeah, two musical heroes.
Just delete that, cut that.
Yeah, I'll edit that, don't worry. Yeah, I'll be edited.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be edited out completely.
I have to say, having heard some of them back, I have noticed Rick's editing is particularly favoured in a particular direction.
So I'm sitting here with two.
Well, I also stutter as well.
I've got a couple of fascinating photos, and you'll see why. Oh, sorry, Nicky.
which reminds me, you must have a photo taken this time, because we always forget that. But yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Thank you. It's been loads of fun. Thank you very much.
Well, it's times like this I really do appreciate my job and the people that surround me. I'm just so lucky. I get to hang out with my heroes in my studio, talking music, my favourite subject, with all my favourite people. So thank you so much, Nick and Jess and Lee, for coming down. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on Unsung Heroes. Jess, I really look forward to some collaborations with you one day. I do know that there's talk of Nina doing some work with us, and I think that would be amazing. I'm hoping that Nina will be on one of the future episodes of Unsung Heroes 2. And I really look forward to that. Watch this space on that one. Okay, look, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. And I look forward to catching up with you next week, where we will be speaking to some more legends. Have a great week. You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, Jake Wood and Lee Bennett. Produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions. With music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde,
artwork by Scarlet Wild, and hosted by Acast. Just to remind you that there is a link in the notes directing you to a Spotify playlist featuring all the songs we have discussed in this episode. Many thanks for listening. Unsung Heroes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.